That's the unknown. It's outside your comfort zone, something you've never even tried to do before. But if you don't do it, would you ever sit here and ask, what if, what if, what if? And I, when I really thought about that, it became an emotional decision. It's like, yeah, I would probably sit here and always ask, what if I took that job? What if I made that leap? And that's what caused me to pack up my stuff and get in the car and go. That's what did, because I did not want to live with any sort of regret. I did not, and I still don't. I never want to live a life asking myself, what if?
Welcome to Auto Spotlight, live long and prosper. I'm Sridhar Sengupta, your host and the co-founder and CEO of Auto Finance. In this podcast series, we don't just scratch the surface. We delve deep into the mindsets of some of the most successful founders, entrepreneurs, and investors out there. We dissect the pivotal choices that have set the trajectory of their extraordinary lives. We get into the nuts and bolts of how financial strategy and financial thinking can serve a purpose-driven life. So if you're looking for insights that are as intellectual as they're actionable, you're in the right place.
The topics covered in this podcast are conversational and for informational purposes only. This podcast is not intended to serve as investment advice and is not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold any particular security or investment. All opinions expressed by Arda employees and third parties are not necessarily those of Arda Finance.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Arda's Live Long and Prosper podcast. Today's episode is special because it not only features a leader who's made a number of big gutsy moves in his life, he's also someone who shares Arda's mission of democratizing and demystifying the world of finance. Brandon Boyer is a founder and the moderator of Day 2 Investing Community and authors its weekly Money Monday newsletter, reaching over 10,000 technology professionals with investing and personal finance insights. He hosts a bi-monthly AMA or Ask Me Anything with his colleagues at Google, dedicated to the mission of sharing peer-to-peer financial insights and spreading grassroots financial literacy with those around him. During the day, Brandon is a manager at Google Cloud Consulting and has been an early member of Arda Finance who's helped us make Arda better for everyone. So without further ado, here's Brandon. Brandon, thank you so much for joining Arda Live Long and Prosper. It's so wonderful to have you on.
I'm happy to be here. This is great, Caesar.
Right. Especially huge thank you to you for having been a user of Arda for a long time, giving us feedback and for having held us to a high standard. And I hope you keep doing that forever.
I hope so too.
I'll keep referring back to the Day 2 Investing community. So maybe I should start off with that. Like, do you want to tell us a little bit about the Day 2 Investing community, what you do, what the community is interested in? Also, like, at some point, I'd love to know why you started it.
Yeah. So the Day 2 Investing community, it's really just an email group where people who have investing questions can ask them with people who have probably done those investing things or lived that investing in finance life and are able to answer. It started when I was actually working in the tech space, and I found out that there was an internal group. People were talking about basic finance concepts, usually generally around, you know, their benefits or maybe some stock that they would get through work and stuff like that, answering questions. I knew a couple of things, so I joined a group and I would ask them questions when I was new, and eventually I was answering questions. It grew to the point where the person who started the email group said, hey, do you want to run it? And I said, sure. And I took it over, and then I started to just include links to, like, you know, blog posts that people have written on the internet and stuff like that, finance related, and share that with people. That morphed into what is now a weekly newsletter I send out of links to blogs and things that I speak on, some funny jokes and things like that. Well, what happens, many of the people I got to know and meet, you know, they move on, take new jobs, leave the company. And somebody asked, hey, is there anything like this when I leave the company? And I said, you know what? That's a good point. So let's create something external. And that's how Day 2 Investing was born. So the tech company I was working at was called Amazon. And you may have heard of it.
Nobody's heard of it.
Yes. One of the tenets at Amazon is the idea that it's always day one. The idea is if you have that fresh beginner mind, you always think it's the first day, the newness of it. You keep that in your head. You always have the energy to innovate and, you know, break through your boundaries and everything. Well, in tongue in cheek, we call our group day two investing, with the idea being that day one is when you start doing all the crazy finance investing stuff. You YOLO, you buy the crypto, you get the NFTs, you get the options, do all the crazy stuff. Day two is when you realize, wait a minute, I might need to slow down here before I lose all my money and actually do things the proper way. So we called it day two investing, and that's how it grew. And now it's extended well beyond Amazon. There are folks from other tech companies there, folks in government agencies, professionals, entrepreneurs, and many others who are on the list as well.
So, Brandon, let's dial a little bit into you. And I'd love to think about or have you talk about a pivotal moment in your life where you had to make a decision between that had to balance between career, personal needs, your family, as well as money. And if you can tell us a little bit about what that pivotal moment or decision point in your life was, and then how did you decide, or what was the framework that helped you make the decision?
Ooh. You know, I have a bit of a non-traditional career path, so I have a few moments like that. The first one that pops in my head, this would be 2009. So go back to 2009, you know, the global economy is in recession from the financial crisis, teetering on the brink of financial collapse. People have lost their jobs everywhere. People are losing their homes, not just in the U.S., but across the world. At the time, I'm living in Las Vegas. So I went to high school and college in Vegas. I was actually just finishing up college that same year, May of that year. And I had already been working for the county government for about 5 or 6 years at that point. So I had a career in government and was doing all right. But now I'm done with college, and I had to ask myself if this is what I want to do. Going in, I thought I would be a government employee for the rest of my life. Work in government, collect my pension, do my thing, maybe a little bit of basic investing on the side. I was already interested in it by then. But now the opportunity presented itself, and the economic situation had gotten so bad, especially in Vegas, which at the time was the fastest growing city in the country and had this huge housing boom. So they were disproportionately affected by the housing crisis. It got so bad that even the government was doing layoffs.
And oh, wow. Yeah, those were really tough times.
It was tough times. I was fortunate enough to not be laid off, but what it did is that it shattered my sense of financial security. One of the reasons I got into government, most of my family had worked in government, was that this idea that it instilled in me that government is a safe job. You get in, you're in. That's it. You'll never they can't fire you. You'll be there forever. Well, 2009 shattered that illusion. And so now I realize, okay, there's no such thing as job security. And the financial security that I was taking for granted actually wasn't really there. So now there's no security. There is only opportunity, because there's always risk. And so I took a flyer. I did the craziest thing you could possibly think of in 2009 when everyone's losing their job and I have a government guaranteed job. And that is, I took another job. I literally went onto it. I kid you not. I went onto an online job search site during a time when everyone and their mom is probably looking for jobs online, saw an opening for another government job that I might be qualified for in Seattle, a place that I had never been to and didn't know anyone there. And I happened to get the job. I went out, interviewed, happened to get the job. And by August of that year, I packed up everything that could fit in my car, and I drove 1,200 miles from Vegas to Seattle. At the time, I was just thinking, I'm out of school. Let's just see what other opportunities might be there. I wasn't taking it seriously that I might actually leave. But it wasn't until after I did the interview, and when they called me back a few weeks later and said, we want to offer you the job. And I just, without even really thinking about it, I said, I accept. And then I hung up the phone. I said, oh, crap. I'm about to leave my job and just move somewhere else. It was a huge turning pivot point in my life because it opened up the opportunity. Like I said, I came to a city where I didn't know anyone. It opened up the opportunity, new experiences, really changed the entire course of my life. It was a financial improvement in the sense that I got a little bit of a pay bump, but Seattle was much more expensive than Vegas, so it really didn't go anywhere. But it opened up doors of opportunity. One of the biggest things it did is exposed me to much closer to the tech world. Amazon and Microsoft are headquartered in the Seattle area. So I got to really see firsthand something that I didn't see much in Vegas. And it got me itching to want to get into that space. It got me focused on career growth and everything else. That was a huge pivotal point. I would not be where I'm at today if I didn't make that, what at the time was considered an insane decision. Everyone, including my own family, said, you are crazy to leave your current job right now in this environment to go take a brand new job. They might fire you in a week. You don't know. But it was one of the best decisions I ever made.
I want to dial back to that particular time, right? When you were looking at, you made a few big changes. New city, right? Leaving a job, going into a completely different job. I mean, this is, this was Seattle PD, but were you still in tech? Like, were you in tech in the government job in Vegas? Or did you switch into tech at that point? In data science and tech?
I was more data science in Vegas. I was actually working in the planning department, in the zoning and planning department in Clark County, Nevada. So part of my job was to use software and do data analysis to literally create the zoning and planning maps. So when Vegas was the fastest growing city in the country, I had lines out the door of people coming to me. I need zoning and planning maps. These are communities and houses we're going to build and all other stuff. So it was a lot of data analytics, not a whole lot of tech, which was sometimes slightly frustrating because I was getting a degree in computer science. I wanted to get more involved in tech. The police department job was pure IT. It was pure tech. And so I saw an opportunity to really leverage the degree that I had, but it was also a brand new opportunity. And also what I saw, I can go to a new city, a tech-oriented city, leveraging my degree and really get into a situation where I could have a greater impact in the community. But it was definitely at the time, obviously it worked out in retrospect, but at the time, I was terrified, quite frankly.
But how do you make that decision? Like, who did you think about? Was it something that you had deep internal conviction on? Because you said your family and others were like, this is crazy, Brandon, don't do it. So what did you think through the decision framework, or on hindsight, you feel like you kind of just said, let's take a chance, YOLO, and then like, I'd love to tease that apart.
Yeah, I'm happy to chat about that. First of all, I am not a YOLO person. I am not a shoot first, ask questions later type person. I obsess over thinking and planning about things, often to a fault. Sometimes it causes me to delay making a decision. So it's something I still work on to this day. So I thought about it repeatedly. I was actually shocked that I responded yes so quickly, because that was one of the few times in my life that I said yes before I really thought it all out. But what ultimately made me decide to do it, I weighed all the pros and cons. I remember looking up, because one of the things I used to do in Vegas is I actually worked on the 2010 census. So I'm so accustomed to looking at all kinds of demographic data that the government has, census data and things like that. So I was looking at demographics between Las Vegas and Seattle and how things will work out, figuring cost of living, everything I could think of. But what ultimately made me decide to actually act, I narrowed it down to just a simple question. If you don't do this, do you believe when you're older, on your deathbed, that you will ask yourself, what if, that you would maybe regret the decision? You know, you've done this thing in Vegas. You know where you're at. You grew up here. You know the environment. You're comfortable here. That's the unknown. It's outside your comfort zone, something you've never even tried to do before. But if you don't do it, would you ever sit here and ask, what if, what if, what if? And when I really thought about that, it became an emotional decision. It's like, yeah, I would probably sit here and always ask, what if I took that job? What if I made that leap? And that's what caused me to pack up my stuff and get in the car and go. That's what did it, because I did not want to live with any sort of regret. I did not. And I still don't. I never want to live a life asking myself, what if? I'd rather say I tried it, didn't work, than to say I never tried it at all, and I kind of wish I at least gave it a shot.
If I can go into another big change that you did, or maybe you don't think of it as a big change, but you went then from, you know, again, Seattle in police department, which is kind of government, and you jumped headfirst into the private sector, into, you know, a company that now people know about. I mean, at that point, it was known, but it wasn't sort of the giant it was now, right? Amazon. How did you decide on that? Like, what drove that decision and that thinking?
Well, there's one part you're missing there. I didn't go straight from the police department to Amazon. I had to make a detour first. It was interesting because I was at the police department. And at the time, again, it's 2009, Amazon had just started to make their move into taking over Seattle, where they have all their buildings, everything now. They had a few buildings, but they had just started making their move. So I'm working in one of the precincts in downtown Seattle where the 911 center is. I was helping to manage the 911 system. And I'm watching over the subsequent years, 2010 through 2015, of just all these giant skyscrapers being built up all around us. The area where I was at was quiet because it was the recession, 2009, very few people around. I remember I used to take my lunch around 12:15 and just walk around a block. There was no one there. And then a couple years later, I had to start taking my lunch at like 11:15 just to beat the crowds because there was just thousands of Amazon employees all over the place. I watched all these buildings get built and I'm thinking, I remember vividly watching all these folks. And I'm like, I'm not good enough to work there. I'd never be able to work there. And so I didn't even try to apply because I didn't think I was good enough. I'm just a government employee. They take people out of these big, giant, well-known tech industry colleges and stuff like that. Who am I? I went to a state school in Nevada. So I ended up making a detour through a series of crazy events. I wound up leaving my police department job to go work at the White House. And so I ended up moving to DC for 2 years in 2016 and 2017. I went to go work on the Obama White House and I stayed there through the transition into the Trump administration. It's a whole bunch of stories there. But one of the things in the organization I was with called the U.S. Digital Service was pulling in a bunch of people from the tech industry, from the Googles, the Amazons, the Microsofts of the world to help. It started off by bringing in tech experts to help stand up healthcare.gov when it was first launched. And then it grew and said, hey, we can fix other things in the federal government. And they were recruiting all these technical experts. And through a just happenstance, I happened to get pulled in. Even though I wasn't one from one of these tech companies, I worked in tech. And critically, I knew government. And so they pulled me in to work at the White House and the Pentagon. And so I did that for a couple of years. That's actually where I met my wife. And so I do that. And now I'm working alongside people from Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, all these big tech companies. And after 2 years, I'm like, wait, I can hold my own with these folks. I started off with a massive case of imposter syndrome. And through action, I was able to realize I can do what they're doing. And they also confirmed it. They said, Brandon, you are just as good as we are. You can do it. And so they were the ones who encouraged me, like, you should go work in tech. And so that's what gave me the confidence to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to make the leap now. I made it to, you could argue, the top of government. And so now I'm going to go make the leap into the private sector. So that's what caused me to go into tech.
So you and your wife were in Seattle, in Washington, in DC, and then you decide to make a career change to tech. I mean, obviously, first part was, you know, you knowing and you feeling that you could make the change. But then how do you think about that decision along with your spouse? I don't know whether you're married at that point, but, you know, we're going to move again and go back to Seattle and go now into tech.
Caesar, it was even crazier than that. Okay.
This is getting more fun.
So my wife worked at the White House and I was doing most of my stint at the Pentagon, but I would often travel back and forth to the White House as well. And we actually met through a trip that she was organizing with our team at Camp David. So we went out to Camp David and we get there and she's one of the people there to greet us. I thought she was one of the people who works at Camp David. Come to find out, no, she actually works with our same team, just focused on the White House while I was at the Pentagon. And I had a rule at the time, especially since I was traveling out to DC from Seattle. I said, I'm not going to date anyone I work with. You know, I don't know how things are going to go. I don't date anyone I work with. So I kept an eye on her, but you know, I'm like, arms length, not doing anything. Fast forward, we get to about 2 years later and find out that she's leaving. She's moving on to go work at a big bank's headquarters. And so I'm having a conversation. She lets me know that. And I said, you know, when is your last day? It was like a Wednesday or Tuesday. And she said, my last day is Friday. I said, when are you done? She said, I'm done at 5. I said, what are you doing at 7? And that ended up being our first date. But here's where it gets crazy. our first date was her last day working in government, because now she's no longer a colleague, so I could she's fair game, right? Where it gets interesting is that same day, in fact, just 2 hours before our date, I had an interview with Amazon. And so I finished my shift at work. I do a round robin series of interviews at Amazon. And then as soon as the interviews are over, I leave and go meet my now wife on our very first date. And it is during our very first date that literally during the date, I get a phone call saying, "We'd like to offer you the position at Amazon." So on our first date in DC, I'm telling her that I just got a job and it will be moving back to Seattle in a month. And so, yeah, what ends up happening is we just end up seeing each other. We just cram like 7 months worth of dating into like 30 days. And we saw each other every day. We hung out every day. And then by September, I was on a plane back to Seattle, starting at Amazon. She's still in DC because she had her job. And we did long distance for just over a year, where I was finally able to convince her to come and move out to Seattle with me. And we've been together ever since.
Brandon, let's move a little bit from the pivotal moments. They've been so interesting. And I want to talk a little bit about how you would think back on or what the lessons you've learned out of these, right? Like, so if, let's say, you could go back 15 years, what are the pearls of wisdom you would share with the 25-year-old Brandon and say, you know, this is what I've learned. These are the things that I wish, you know, I want you to know when you're 25.
Man, I should do a blog post on that. I could spend all day just talking about this. I will get a couple off the top of my head. I would say one, which sounds almost kind of bleak, but is actually, when you think about it, I think pretty empowering. And it's something we used to say in the Pentagon all the time. No one's coming to save you. And we said that as a result of saying that, you know, you don't have the luxury of sitting back and hoping someone else will take care of it. You need to take care of it. No one is coming to save you. And so that's something I would tell my younger self. It's like, hey, it's all on you. That can be overwhelming to some people. But I think to a younger version of me, that would have been much more empowering, because it's like, hey, it's all on you. Like, it's entirely within your control. That's an empowering statement. No one's coming to save you. You have to save yourself, and you can do it. You are capable. And so that's one thing I would say. The other thing I say is, you know, continue to be patient. I have been fortunate by being patient and like for a lot of my investments and everything, having a long-term view. But I know at the time, there were many times where it was very tough. And so if I'd go back and tell myself, I would say, hey, I know it's not easy, but it's going to work out if you keep at it. Like, just trust me on that. So be patient and, you know, stay focused. Honestly, like, it's good. One of the things that's benefited me is always having the goals and the focus for things I want to try to accomplish. You know, look, I'm not perfect. I didn't get every single thing done that I wanted to get done, but I got so much of it done. And in many ways, I got more accomplished and then farther along than I ever thought I would be when I was in my 20s. So even though things didn't go exactly according to plan, because I had a plan and because I had an end state in mind, I was able to navigate and adjust and identify opportunities that helped me get closer to my goals. So stay focused, be patient, and, you know, recognize that no one's coming to save you. So you got to do it yourself.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, the way what I'm hearing is in kind of like a have a plan. And then there's this really powerful thing about compounding. You believe in yourself, you stay patient over the long term. And obviously people talk about compounding and investing and in money, but that's equally true for our own selves, right? If you stay focused and you keep doing what you're doing, you're patient, you will compound over time and your skill sets will grow. That's wonderful. Brandon, I know last month or last year, you published the 40 yeah. financial things that you wish, you know, that you learned in your 40 years. Do you want to talk like more with two or three of those things?
Oh, wow. You're putting me on the spot. I got to see if I can pull one real quick. But yeah, I mean, some of the things off the top of my head that I can remember are like, you know, focus less on why. I get this all the time from folks, especially the younger folks, especially when it comes to investing. If you're talking about things like stocks, or, you know, they're investing in crypto or something else, but usually it's stocks and things like that. And they're like, well, why did the stock go down? Why did this company report earnings that beat estimates and yet the stock dropped? Why did this happen? Why did that happen? And one of the things I've come to realize is that people want to know why, because they believe it helps them, you know, get a better sense and understanding. And there's nothing wrong with trying to understand a little bit of why, but sometimes the answer to the why question when it comes to investing is that because more people sold than bought, you know, or more people bought than sold. Like, the supply demand imbalances, and that's it. Like, that's the extent that you need to know. I usually say focus less on why and more on how. How did that happen? What were the factors that caused that to happen? Less about the why behind it, or more about what happened. How did that occur? Because if you understand more of the how the market works, how stocks move, how assets values fluctuate, then you're in a better position to respond to when they do. Then try to sit there and ask why. The other side effect of that is people who want to ask why have a tendency to want to try to validate an opinion or be right. And sometimes I have to say, do you want to be right or do you want to make money? And that's often the biggest thing. And I notice a lot of folks would rather be right than make money. I pulled up the list. So another thing I would tell people in the 40 things is that, you know, one of the best saving and investing things you can do is to pay off any debt that has an interest rate greater than 6%. This is something I've been saying for years. I think is ringing more true now that interest rates have gone up. But even when interest rates were very low, I would say the same thing. It's like, you know as well as I do, the market as a whole has returned average high single digits, low double digits for decades. And if you factor in things like inflation, you'll be lucky if you're getting 6-7% on average in the market. Well, if you have debt that's costing you 6-7%, like, you should be paying that off and get that return. And it really does pay dividends. Another thing that I think that has benefited me personally in my career and my financial life has been getting rid of my student loans. I've been fortunate to be able to get rid of them. And so I didn't have that albatross around my neck when it comes to the new opportunities that came up, like, for example, going to the White House and things like that. Another thing I will do, let's say two more. One other thing is, one of my favorite is there's really only one rule in personal finance. It's spend less than you earn. Everything else that comes out of it is like an opinion, and like some sort of opinion or implementation detail of that one facet. If you remember nothing else, just spend less than you earn. And that's really it.
You keep coming back to this in a number of your newsletters. I've seen this come back again and again. So it's like,
yes,
it's the truth that cannot like be said enough.
It's so basic and simple, but that's it. Oh, and this is probably one of the last ones. Like I said, I have 40 of these, but one that I say is the entire personal finance and investing industry can probably summarize in four steps. Make money. Don't spend all of it. Invest the difference wisely and protect what you have.
That's wonderful.
Really it. Everything that flows from that is usually an implementation detail of one of those four steps. How can I make more money? How can I control my spending or eliminate my debt? How can I invest and grow things over time? How can I make sure I don't lose all the money that I've made so far? That's really it. If we stay true to those four core concepts, everything, and make sure everything we're doing in relation to our finances is aligned to those four concepts, we'll probably be in a good financial position.
If I can push you a little bit, what would be your advice for someone who is sort of has the first two covered out? Let's say you've got you're earning money. You've over the last 10, 20 years, you've kind of learned how to not spend more than you earn, and you're starting to invest something. How do you think about investing and protecting your money?
Yeah. So I usually start off by telling folks, I have conversations with new folks at Google where I'm at now all the time. I usually start off by saying, okay, first thing, you're making all that good tech money now, and you're smart enough not to blow it all. Okay, great. So now that means you have some money that you are saving. You want to do something with it. Number one, recognize, once again, no one's coming to save you, and that this great job that you have today, for whatever reason, may not be there tomorrow. So first things first, build up an emergency fund. And so keep an emergency fund in place. I typically recommend a little bit more than what most people recommend. I recommend about 9 months. I personally,
wow, okay,
12 months. And that's because, Caesar, I've seen some stuff. I've been through a dot-com bust. I've been through the financial crisis. And if you, the more highly specialized you are and the more money you're making in the industry, oftentimes the harder and longer it could take you to find another equivalent job. So you want to make sure you can cover the bills during that time. So an emergency fund. You should do no other investing until you've built out that emergency fund, with one exception. Contribute to your 401k so you can get the company match. From there, it's like, go through the company benefits. Do you have right insurance? If you're young and single and have no kids or dependents, you probably don't need much beyond health insurance, maybe some disability insurance, and that's about it. But if your situation is more complex, you have a spouse who depends on you, you have relatives who depend on you and things like that, now you got to look at life insurance, other types of insurance. If you have a business, you need probably long-term care insurance. If you have aging parents or yourself are elderly and things like that. So you get your, the whole point about all of this is to establish that financial foundation. Okay. Now, if you've done that and you still have money left over, max out your 401k, max out IRA, and then start rolling in, okay, maybe I can start saving for a house or investing in taxable accounts or stuff like that. But by this point, you have an estate, like you have assets of substance. And so that's where doing things like estate planning and figuring out how you're going to manage all this. And it becomes even more important if you have a family that's dependent on you. What happens if I die? What happens if I get hurt? What happens if I'm unable to make decisions? How is that all going to play out? Those are like the things that we start looking at. And that's where stuff like, you know, ARDA and the system that it has comes into play to help with that. That's where looking at your overall portfolio, that's where making sure you are aligned to your financial goals that you've set. And if you have a spouse, make sure your spouse is aligned with you. So it sounds complex in totality, but it's really a series of steps that build on each other.
The other piece you brought up, which I'd love to have you share a little bit more, if you are open to it and you can say no, is how do you pull your spouse into this? Like, how do you and your spouse get together and make a lot of these financial decisions?
Well, I think I'm very fortunate in that regard, in that my spouse is a very direct woman. And she started asking me a lot of questions very early on in our dating life. Remember, we had it all crammed into like a month. And so some of the questions that were asked were financial. And the same thing. She wanted to know, for example, if I was carrying around a bunch of secret debt, for example, and things like that, which I was not. And as now that we are a married couple, we have conversations about the finances at least once a month, sometimes more frequently, especially if we're going to make a large financial decision. We also use, you know, spreadsheets to keep track of things, or apps that help see our holistic picture in order to see everything in one picture. I have access to it. She has access to it. You know, we're a couple, we're a team. So we trust each other and we see what's going on. One of the things I wanted to make sure, it was a personal thing for me, is I never wanted her to feel like she was going to be entirely financially dependent on me. Like I make all the decisions and she doesn't know what's going on. I always wanted her to be able to understand what's going on, where things are at, and also be able to access it if she needed to. So that was a big deal for me. And the same was true with her investments. You know, I have retirement accounts. She has retirement accounts. She had them before she met me, but we were investing in the same way because we have the same goals. So we work backwards from the goals. What are we trying to accomplish in our lives? What do you want to do? What did you want to do before you met me? What did I want to do before I met you? Oh, wait. Looks like a lot of it is aligned. Great. We still want to do those things. Let's do that. What are some new things we want to do? Great. Now, those things are probably going to cost money. So let's work backwards from there, figure out how much they cost and what kind of saving and investing we need to do between now and then in order to meet that goal so we can make it happen. So one of the things we like to do, for example, is travel. So we have a travel budget. We put aside money just for travel and we do things like are deliberate about trying to get miles and points for hotel and flights, stuff like that. It's something that we deliberately spend our money on, and we do it, and we've had great trips as a result.
Brandon, I want to talk a little bit about how you got into investing. Like, how did you start? When did you first think about investing and become so interested in it and, you know, start reading up on it? And you just said you've got a few hundred books that you've read on finance. What got you into it?
This is going to be another funny story, all right? Because it happened by pure happenstance, honestly. It's just one of those things where you happen through a series of events, you happen to find out that you're interested in something you didn't even think about before. So picture this. I'm about 16 years old. I am in between my, I'm actually just turned 17. I'm in between my junior and senior year of high school. So a summer break. So I'm at home not doing anything. It's a day off. I've already been working. I've been working for about 8 months. So I am just relaxing at home. My mom has to go to work. And my mom wanted to do what a lot of moms wanted to do back in the day, and that is watch Oprah. But she has to work. So she asked me, her son who's doing nothing, to tape the Oprah show for her. And as a testament to how old I am, by tape, I mean literally put a VCR and a VCR recorder and tape it. And so for the young kids, these are devices that don't exist anymore. But there was old enough that it was back in the day where you had to put the VCR in the recorder and turn the TV on and leave it on that channel in order for it to record the thing. So TV's on Oprah, it's recording, and I have nothing else to do. So I figured, you know what? I'll sit and watch it. I got nothing else to do. Well, it just so happens that was an episode where she had a financial advisor on the show. And now he's hawking his latest book, okay? But while he's hawking his book, he's actually answering questions and he's clearly explaining things. Now, like I said, I've been working for 6 months for about 8 months. I have money in my pocket and I've been just spending it like you would expect a 17-year-old to just blow through all their money. But he's talking about a few things that I was like, that seems kind of interesting. I've heard about stuff like saving for retirement and investing, but what does that really mean? So on a whim, I decided, you know what? I'm going to go buy this dude's book. So I go to the bookstore, pick up his book, and I read the whole book in a single afternoon.
Wow.
And turns out that was like his third book. So I'm like, let me go read his first two books. And I picked those up and I read those. And I'm like, interesting. So now I'm like, what do other people have to say about this stuff? Because this is just one person's opinion. For all I know, he's completely wrong or whatever. So I just grabbed a couple of other books. And before I knew it, I'm just devouring like a book or two a week and reading up on this stuff. And then I start actually saying, okay, I need to start putting some money to work because I've read so many books. I'm seeing recurring themes. I'm seeing similar things happening. And so now I said, I want to actually start doing something with the money instead of blowing it. Instead of just putting it in the bank account, can I open a brokerage account? Can I invest? So let me try that. And I started seeing some success very early on. Now, mind you, dot-com boom. So I started seeing success early on without realizing why I'm seeing that success. But by that point, I'm hooked. The book said you invest money, you will make money. I put money in the market, it goes up. I'm doing this forever, kind of. And obviously, I learned a lot of things along the way, but that's really what kickstarted it. It was just a happenstance moment that triggered something in me that really became a passionate interest of mine.
Wow, that's such a beautiful story. And it's actually so amazing how, you know, at that age, like that right impetus at that time got you into this. Yeah, it's almost like this is a divine hand at play to get you there. And then, you know, in a way that's led you to now building this community, helping so many other people like get going on this and without having to read the 300 books that, you know, you've read.
Yeah, that was actually the next part of it. The second half of it was like whenever you get into something new, you're excited about something, one of the first things you want to do is tell other people about it, right? And so I'm telling everyone, including my own mom and other friends and family members, and I come to find out nobody I know knows anything about this stuff. Like nothing. And I'm like, it's like here in the books, what is going on? And that's what jump-started me into wanting to try to figure out how to explain this to other people. And so that's what carried me over to wanting to help teach and educate on these topics, as opposed to just learn it and do it myself.
I'm so happy and grateful that you're doing this, Brandon. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing all these experiences. let's close off with a lightning round of questions. So don't put a lot of thought into it. I'll ask you, it's all sort of fill in the blanks. So I'll say a statement and then you complete it. So if you want to prosper, never underestimate the power of dash.
Patience.
Patience. If you want to prosper, never underestimate the power of patience. Beautiful. The three key ingredients for a long, fulfilling life are?
Humility, friendship, and laughter.
Humility, friendship, laughter. That's really beautiful. The simple joy that adds years to my life is?
Ooh. Right now, I would have to say my wife laughing.
Just took it to the next level, Brandon. That's so beautiful. Brandon, thank you so much. This was so fun. And I really, really appreciate your sharing all these insights, being so open, and just doing what you're doing for so many people out there with the Day 2 Investing community. Thank you very much for being on Arda Live Long and Prosper.
Cesar, this was great. It was a pleasure. I mean, I really appreciate the work that you're doing as well to help, you know, make it easier for people to really build out their family offices and really expose them to aspects of finance that they wouldn't get access to otherwise. Thank you.